Hi, this is Lindsay Miller, and you're listening to the Arkansas Times Week in Review podcast on January, what's today, the 12th?
Yeah.
Sponsored by 42 Bar and Table at the Clinton Center. On today's edition, we're going to talk a little bit about national politics and President Trump, Governor Hutchinson navigating a primary challenger and the fiscal session, layoffs at UAMS, and big hog farm decision in North Arkansas. I'm joined once again by Dr. Jay Barth. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Lindsay.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start off at least briefly with the big news of the week, and that's that Washington Post and others, and then today Senator Dick Durbin, reported that during an Oval Office meeting with lawmakers yesterday, President Trump grew tired discussing restoring protections for immigrants from the likes of Haiti, El Salvador, and war-torn countries in Africa, and said, why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here? Tom Cotton was in the meeting, and today he used the classic, he didn't recall Trump making those comments, but he said Trump was right to point out the imbalance in our current immigration system. And Cotton has really emerged as this total hardliner on immigration. Meanwhile, Steve Womack, I don't know if you saw later today, told 4029 News in Northwest Arkansas, he said, what I think the president is saying is that if you're only appealing to people from countries that are behind the times, depraved countries, if that's the element you're appealing to, and of course a lot of these folks are wanting to come to America and pursue the American dream, then he feels like that we should make the same or a better appeal to people from other European countries, etc., that can come here and actually fit into society as we know it and do the kinds of things that will make America a prosperous nation.
Whew. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, though. I mean, I think it says so much about the last year is that when I heard the initial quote, it did not feel that startling. It,
right.
You know, it's just, you know, it's what he thinks, what the president thinks, and his normal operating procedure. But, you know, it clearly was one of those moments during this year where it clearly hit a nerve. And I think it was, you know, the language itself, which I do think, you know, I think back to the Watergate era, and when the tapes were first released, you know, a lot of the kind of angst about Richard Nixon in middle America was how the language he used.
Right.
And so I think there is, you know, this sense of place in the Oval Office and the use of just incredibly crude language in general, but then when it has, you know, an incredible racist edge, I think that's at a whole new level. And I think clearly the Republican Party has, you know, really is splitting over this issue again. He has faced, you know, some pretty vehement criticism from Congresswoman Maya Love from Utah, who does have roots in some of the countries that he referenced, but then you see this other path. I think Tom Cotton is an interesting part of this. I think on one level, Tom Cotton probably would have preferred not to have been in that meeting to have to deal with this cleanup today. That said, as you suggest, I mean, Tom Cotton is really, as he envisions a presidential race in the future, while he doesn't have a Trump-like persona by any means, he's kind of an anti-Trump in terms of basic demeanor, on this issue that I think increasingly it's obvious was the magic piece of the Trump appeal within the Republican base. I mean, Cotton is trying to gain control of that, and he did it with his initial policy announcement at the White House about 2 months ago, and again on this issue, he's trying to be the hardliner. And you know, he and Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, you know, Graham went after Cotton yesterday, I guess. You know, Cotton saying, "Oh, he's got this big plan," and Lindsey Graham saying that, you know, you've got to get some Democrats on this, and basically said, you know, Cotton, that's a non-starter.
Right.
Immigration has to be a bipartisan approach. And what's particularly, you know, frustrating about this latest event is that there did seem to be a pathway towards some kind of compromise, at least in the Senate. And it was not going to be, it was going to be an ugly piece of legislation that nobody loved, but there was at least some kind of measure that that Graham was on and some Democrats, and there looked to be a pathway, and now that's all blown up because of the president's remarks.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on and talk about our sponsor, and that's 42 Bar and Table at the Clinton Center. If you haven't been yet, since late last year, they've done a full renovation. It's very lovely dinner service now. You don't have to go through the museum to get there, which means you don't have to go through security. You just walk down a set of stairs. They got a great cocktail hour going, and just an excellent menu. You can always kind of get everything there. I know that you are a vegetarian, and sometimes it's hard to find veggie-friendly places, but they have a Clinton vegan special there that's quite tasty, and a really delightful Chinese noodle dish that you can eat with just veggies or with some salmon. So,
well, it's just so great. I mean, that space is it's one of the prettiest spaces in town.
Yeah.
There, but it was kind of wasted because they weren't open in the evenings, and so it's really great.
And parking is easy too. Yeah. I know there are a lot of people that come to Little Rock and they think, where am I going to park? So you don't have to worry about that here. So let's talk about Governor Hutchinson. This is probably the most trying time. Well, I don't know. Maybe you could think of his mother's, but it is a trying time for him, as a challenging time for him as governor. He has a far right challenger in Jan Morgan, who you wrote about in your column in the Arkansas Times a week or so back, saying that was the most interesting political development of the season, likely. And so he's got to deal with that. And then he has the fiscal session coming, and he knows that reauthorizing the Medicaid expansion is absolutely critical to making his budget work and fulfilling his budget priorities, namely lowering taxes some more. And he's got two seats down in the Senate that he's got to deal with. So these are tough times. How do you see the governor dealing with everything so far?
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly, as you suggest, I mean, he's trying to do this balancing act. But what's interesting to me is that I have little doubt after the last couple of weeks, both the all the attention he's given to the numbers being reduced on Medicaid, all of his statements about guns, it seems clear to me that they've got some internal polling that suggests that somebody like Jan Morgan, maybe not Jan Morgan herself, but somebody like that is a danger in this political season, and that he has to respond to that. I do think that it may be telling us a little bit about Asa Hutchinson as a politician. He is a politician who has lost a lot of races. He knows how painful that is. I think he is, really going as far as he can to avoid getting caught by her in any way that really causes him trouble. But at the same time, he's trying to be a responsible, manager of government. And so I don't envy him. That said, it has been telling how obviously he has adjusted in a way that really is responsive to some of her critiques about government and some of her critiques about him as a rhino in particular.
Sure.
And so that's what's been the most interesting part of the last couple of weeks to me. It tells me that it's some combination of his risk averseness or concern as a politician combined with some evidence, probably from some internal polling, that suggests something is dangerous about this environment for him.
Yeah. You mentioned the open carry thing, which I think was the most transparent reaction to Morgan, where he, apropos of nothing, said that he believed that open carry was law of the land, and he informed the state police and state prosecutors that that was his belief. Doesn't matter. I mean, he has no direct oversight over those. But then we saw this week two things that also I thought sort of signaled that he was trying to score some political points, and that was his letter to all state colleges, 4 and 2 year, asking 4 year colleges to freeze tuition and 2 years to match the CPI increase. that he did that before he appeared at the Joint Budget Committee to unveil his new budget. Again, that's something that he has no control over. I mean, clearly he makes appointments, and he has huge sway over the legislature, which allocates funds to the higher education institutions that desperately need them and don't want to see them cut back anymore. So he certainly holds political sway, but still, that is a pretty easy thing to score points with your constituents. And then we saw yesterday him trumpet a letter that he'd sent to the Public Service Commission, which is supposed to be an independent body, serves at the pleasure of the governor, and he has two appointees, but he's not supposed to be able to tell the Public Service Commission what to do. As it happens, Public Service Commission is already looking into this. Almost certainly, what he asked them to reduce make utilities reduce their rates because of the tax cut. Public Service Commission was already looking into that and likely would have done that anyway. But a nice way for him to kind of say, "Hey, I'm looking out for you ratepayers across the state."
And then he did a press conference with Cindy Gillespie from the governor's office, which is kind of weird for him to do something so high profile. I mean, he's a low key politician, and he is clearly consciously conscious of this electoral dynamic that's in play at the moment. You know, Jan Morgan, for her, she is continuing to travel the state and show up at meetings and do her thing. She had, I think y'all had on the blog, some posts from her trip to El Dorado, which was just classic Jan Morgan, which is a lot of talk. But I think we've seen that in the last couple of years, and it's had some political resonance in a place like this.
How do you see the fiscal session going for the governor? Do you think that we're going to go through another crazy fight and it's going to end up being reauthorized, or hard to know? Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they got a tremendous, or the governor got a tremendous boost from the Trump administration's green lighting of work requirements for some Medicaid recipients. I think that's that obviously is something that allows the Arkansas Works plan and maybe then some in terms of adding additional requirements to move forward. I think he's going to have to make it as, conservative as possible to get it through. It feels like it because of the desire of so many Republicans to maintain as much of the tax cuts that have, gone forward so far. They know that if Arkansas Works goes away, the state budget goes kablooey in terms of the ability to balance. You have to think it goes through somehow, but in a way in which he bows to additional conservative reforms.
Yeah. So probably the biggest news of the week, at least in Arkansas, was the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality's denial of a new permit for the C&H Hog Farms concentrated animal feeding operation in Mount Judy in Newton County. This has been a controversial thing that's been going on since 2012. Grassroots groups all throughout the Buffalo River watershed formed to fight it. There've been all sorts of legal battles. The original permit expired, I believe, in 2016, mm-hmm. and C&H had been operating under just an indefinite extension while ADEQ evaluated the new permit. I mean, we're not going to get into the technical aspects of this, but the politics of it, I think, are kind of interesting. What did you make of it?
I think I've rarely seen something in state government that shocked everyone on all sides as much as this did. I mean, I think no one saw this coming, and it was clear from the operators and their attorney, and then of course the some pretty amazing quotes from some of the grassroots activists as well that didn't hide their surprise at all. I will be shocked if this remains a staff level decision. It was done on technical grounds, but there is an appeal process, you know, there are several steps to go. And I think that, you know, even a lot of the advocates recognize this is still an uphill battle because of, you know, the any time in that part of the state, you know, that you're threatening or perceived to threaten, you know, jobs, even a small number of jobs or any economic activity at all. I mean, that's a real threat. That, you know, the question is, you know, and I know very little about where the thinking is of the operators at this point, you know, but they have been, you know, looking at this other operation down near Clarksville. The question is, do they ultimately decide that the cost, the ongoing angst about this facility at Mount Judy is outweighed by the benefits? Because it's still a pretty small operation, even though it could have big detriments to the Buffalo. I think that's a question moving forward. That said, you know, the operators have lived on that land for a good while, and they really want to have a facility in that area. So this thing's not over, but I think it is, you know, kind of, I would say, to the advocates' credit, you know, this thing wouldn't have even been in play without, you know, just the ongoing dedicated commitment of a lot of these advocates, you know, who've worked together on this. And it's a fascinating story.
Yeah. I mean, a really good case study in grassroots activism.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's why I'm fascinated by the Buffalo, you know, just as a teacher and scholar, and spent a lot of time up there. But this latest piece is so interesting because I think it shows so much in this place that has no economic hope at all, the desire to have some sense of economic vitality. And this hog farm, as small as it is and as few jobs as it creates, you know, a lot of the locals there really say this is one of the hopes for the future in a place that doesn't have much hope. But then you have other folks who, you know, live there, have come to live there, and have become natives of that place, or become longtime residents of that place because of how much they love the place. So it's a fascinating story and a great Arkansas story.
Yeah, well, it's something we'll continue to cover. I did speak to several people, and granted, they were against the hog farm and been working to see its permit denied, but said that historically, the ADEQ does not deny too many permits, but that when it does, typically the pollution and
the board that
they appeal to, it's right. The pollution and ecology something,
right,
gives deference to technical staff, and so have appellate court. So if they lose at the commission, then they would go to circuit court in Newton County or directly to the Court of Appeals, and so we shall see. But you're right, it's definitely not over. First thing to happen is to see whether or not a stay is granted.
Right,
that'll be a signal. The other really big news, perhaps to rival the Buffalo story, was the mass layoffs at UAMS that happened on Monday. I believe it was 600 positions were eliminated. Many of those were unfilled. I think somewhere in the range of 250, 260 actual people with jobs were laid off. You know, the writing was on the wall for this. We did a cover story about a month ago, UAMS on the brink. But still, it's, you know, real people are involved. It's and this is the state's teaching hospital, the state's hospital. It's a troubling development.
Yeah, I mean, huge personal story, as you say, huge economic story for Little Rock. I
sure.
mean, you know, the... And I think a lot of folks have always said, oh, Little Rock's economy is kind of impervious to dramatic downturns because it's got all these protectors, it's got state government, it's got health care, all these things that are kind of holding it up. You know, this shows even the fragility of the health care sector. And you're right, I mean, this is a lot of jobs. And I think, you know, beyond the jobs that that are lost now, just the long-term sense that this thing's not over yet, that UAMS continues to be a pretty fragile place, and the morale that it morale problems that it creates in that facility. It's a really bleak moment for this really important institution. And then of course there's some programs at Children's Hospital also affected as well. And so you know, obviously the interim head who made all these cuts, she will be moving out, and the new permanent UAMS head will be arriving. I know this was part of to give him create a situation where he didn't have to immediately make all these cuts when he got here. But, you know, there clearly has to, based on, as y'all's reporting suggests, there has to be some kind of new vision for how to do the programming. It's an important institution.
Yeah. And the governor signaled no new money from the state.
No. And it's been very flat for years. Now, they obviously have saved some money from not having to do uncompensated care, but if for some reason Arkansas Works wasn't reauthorized, then UAMS is really flat.
And even, I mean, the governor wants to remove about 60,000 people from Arkansas Works if he gets this waiver from the Trump administration. That could likely have an impact on UAMS.
Yep.
All right, well, let's leave it there and move on to endorsements. What do you have?
Well, I've been in winter break mode, so I've been catching up on television, and I don't know if it's been y'all have endorsed it or not, or even talked about it, but Big Mouth. Have you watched Big Mouth?
No.
So Big Mouth, the Netflix animated series.
Oh yes, I have. I endorsed it actually. I forgot what it was called.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
So anyway, so you have two endorsements for Big Mouth. It's incredibly vulgar, but very, very funny and incredibly sweet. I mean, this is animated series about puberty, and
it was created by Nick Kroll.
Yeah, and so it's got Jordan Peele, John Mulaney voice characters, and the kids are really sweet to one another. The parents are funny, and it's a really nice show that's also hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see this being a show that I will show my teenage kids at some point.
Well, I don't have kids, but I was thinking this could actually be a pretty good sex ed thing. I mean, it's very human. It's very real.
Super honest.
Yeah. It's very. So anyway, that was, I am watching The Crown too, finally. And that's pretty, at the other end of the Netflix spectrum, pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Television. So and historically, I mean, I know the high points of British history in that era, but learned a lot. So it's also a good history lesson.
Yeah, we actually watched an episode of The Crown last night. It's very like Downton Abbey, like fancy castle porn kind of stuff. But that can be just what the doctor ordered sometimes. I am going to endorse something that I've endorsed long ago, I think, and that is taking class at the Arkansas Arts Center. I've done it for a number of years, but hadn't for the last three or so, but just started back doing a woodworking class. And if you go to their website, you'll see that they have classes, but if you were just a casual, go to the Arts Center when they have big events, you might not know that they have all these regular classes, but they do a really wide range of things from, painting and drawing to sculpture, woodworking. They just started doing a CNC class. CNC router is like a computerized router that allows you to do elaborate carvings into wood. I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, and we're actually taking our goddaughter to her first theater class.
Oh, cool.
There tomorrow. They've got some cool kids programming as well. And this is like a nine-week Winter Wonderland, so it's kind of a play, and it's very introductory theater, but just kind of getting kids into the notion of imagination and using the stage in that way. So anyway, great institution, and I think, when we think about the kind of near future of Little Rock, I mean, I think the reinvigoration of the Art Center that's going to come with the new construction. I think that's something to look forward to for the city in terms of, you know, giving the arts community here a real boost in the next few years.
No doubt. Bigger woodworking area, too. You took some elaborate projects. All right, well, thanks so much for being with us, Jay, and thanks for listening. Go to 42 and tell them we sent you, and subscribe via iTunes or wherever you get podcasts, and leave us a rating and review. Thanks.